you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey everyone, I'm JJ Stankovitz and welcome into another edition of the Under Center podcast brought to you by Sprinkler Fitters Union Local 281. On this episode, Cam Ellis, John Moon, Mullen, and I ask, just how much do we need to alter our expectations for Mitch Trubisky after he's made 32 career starts? Also, how's his body language? And how's Matt Nagy reacting to Eddie Pinheiro's hashtag hashgate comments that he made on Tuesday? All that and more on the Under Center podcast starting right now.
What it means to me to be a Chicago Bear, it's an easy question. It means everything to me.
It means rich tradition, black and blue division, defense, legends, linebackers.
The history of it. I mean, I'm a big history guy, so understanding this was one of the first franchises just kind of blows my mind, honestly, that I was able to be a part of that.
The city, just the nostalgia of playing for a storied franchise, the storied franchise of the running back position with guys like Gale Sayers and Walter Payton and being able to follow in those footsteps. So being a Bear means everything.
And what more can you say?
All right, guys. So Mitch Trubisky has made 32 career starts. That amounts to two full seasons of starts, obviously spread out over the course of 3 years. And I think this is a good point to kind of pull back on Trubisky and ask, where do our expectations need to go for this guy going forward? Because right now, it feels like the hope for Trubisky is nowhere near the expectations that need to be put in place on this quarterback going forward for the Bears.
I think a lot of the expectations really came from the coach.
Yeah.
Things that Matt Nagy was saying, the, you know, it'll be my offense 2.0 and all that sort of thing. So there was a kind of an unspoken assumption that the rising tide of Matt Nagy's genius, sarcasm intended, would just raise all boats. It just hasn't happened. And you know, not to say, and I did a piece that looked at some of the, you know, Steve Young, Rich Gannon, Vinny Testaverde. There's been a number of coaches that or players that just bloomed later. I'm not sure that I see where that's going to come from Mitch at this point.
Yeah, look, I'm not one to tell anyone to not be optimistic about watching sports because there's no point in watching sports if you're just going to be a huge pessimist all the time. But how can you not look at his body of work and lower your expectations? I just don't see how. And if you want to sit there and go, he's going to have an aha moment sometime in film study or on the field and he's going to figure it out, good, go do that. Think that. That's the thing that's perfectly fine. I just don't see how you can in this situation.
Yeah, and I think really the expectation should be lowered based on, and not using these as isolated instances, but a pattern is developing. He isn't getting better in year three. He's getting worse.
It's getting worse.
So you used to see ticks going up and so forth. And I really remember Rex Grossman, this kind of guy, and this is will apply to Trubisky. There was only so good he was going to get because of ability, football intelligence, and again, it's not to say intelligence in general, but Rex did not have that it that the great ones seem to have. You already know that Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes have it.
Right.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers and so on. I'm not sure I see that. I didn't see it in Rex, and as things went on, the organization kind of knew it. He is what he was going to be, and number of starts aside, Rex was kind of what he turned out to be, and I really sense a lot of that with Trubisky. Like I said, he's not getting better. We're seeing some of the same mistakes or worse, and that is not the positive.
So I'm taking Mitch Trubisky's full 32-game career to read the stats here, and I know people in this building will dismiss his rookie year because it was under a different offense. By the way, quick note, his QBR, his rookie year was 31.6. His QBR this year, 31.8. I'm not totally ready to just dismiss that out of hand. But over Mitch's career, he's completing 63.7% of his passes, 6,508 yards, 36 touchdowns, 22 interceptions, average yards per attempt 6.8, and a passer rating of 86.4. So I did a big old number crunching post on NBC Sports Chicago. You can read the details of it on there. But the gist of it, so 57 quarterbacks who started 32 games, not as backups, so, you know, throwing out Brian Hoyer, Josh McCown to start their career, and then started at least five more games in their career over the last 20 years. So I know it's a little convoluted. Again, the details are on NBC Sports Chicago.
We're riding with you the whole way. Just finish out the thought.
But over the first – the difference between those quarterbacks' first 32 starts and what they did over the rest of their career, this is over the last 20 years.
I'm with you.
Completion percentage goes up by 1.9%. Yards per game goes down by 2.3 yards. There is no change in touchdown to interception ratio. Yards per pass attempt goes up by 0.05 yards per attempt, and passer rating goes up by 9.4 points. Your finger's pointing at me, Cam. What are you saying?
Do you think any of that has to do with the fact that maybe they get benched later in their careers?
Yeah, that's why I put it at five games.
Okay.
Because guys like Quincy Carter and Kyle Bowler don't apply because through 32 games, those teams had seen – the Cowboys had seen enough. The Ravens had seen enough. They got rid of them.
Right.
Five, actually kind of funny. The cutoff point was Christian Ponder. Which we're not.
You hear that comp though. In the last month, I've seen more Trubisky Ponder comps than I have seen in 2 years prior.
So, on these numbers though, the point I'm making is that we should not expect Trubisky to get better. What he did through the first 32 games, oftentimes, is what a quarterback is over the rest of his career. Now, granted, Moon, you brought up some examples there. The most notable ones out of the group that I looked at: Alex Smith and Drew Brees, guys who made significant leaps in their careers. Also with different teams.
Yeah, well, a lot of those, you know, the guys I mentioned, you know, Alex Smith, Steve Young, Testaverde, Rich Gannon. Right, the bad news is it all was with them. It wasn't the team that drafted them. And you know, the interesting, we saw last year, guys, this team won 12 games, and Trubisky, there was reason to be hopeful, partly because, no, in large part, because of what the defense was giving him. He was kind of working with a big net.
Yeah,
I mean, they were going to get the ball back for him. And again, it's not to dismiss anything he did or didn't do, but the way the defense was playing, for example, gives you confidence. I know if we didn't get any points, that they're going to get the ball back in five plays and we're going to try again. I don't think we're seeing that. And again, this is putting nothing on the defense, but we're kind of seeing Mitch with the scheme pulled away and we kind of pulled the defense back. And now we're kind of left with the Mitch we saw in the fourth quarter of the Chargers game. Two bad turnovers, that's kind of bad Rex or bad Mitch. And we're just ripping the guy, but, you know, we're looking at the evidence sitting there.
Right.
And it's very hard to see where he's going to improve. Now, maybe it's with another coach. Now, again, Matt Nagy was not the coach that drafted him.
Right.
So we won't know whatever happens if he does, in fact, finish his career elsewhere. But I do look for Matt Nagy to kind of push for, let me get my own quarterback, even if it's a fourth-round draft choice in here next year.
And we're in the age of the rookie quarterback contract, right? I mean, you the second you take a quarterback, you are on the clock. And you look around the quarterback, who takes a half decade to turn into who they're going to be anymore? You know, at least the age we're in right now, you sort of see what quarterback you're getting, a year, 2.5 years into a contract, more or less.
Yeah.
There are things, and you just... Trubisky's going to – they can pick up his fifth-year option, the end of next year?
No, it has to be by May of 2020.
By the end of May.
Which is not guaranteed.
Right.
It's guaranteed for injury only.
Right.
Yeah.
And so by that point in decision-making, generally you know what quarterback you have. And I get that Bortles got extended and that was a mistake. And mistakes happen because not every NFL team is run competently. That's just the way it is. But I think we're just at the point in – the length of a contract, to put it simplistically, where you need to see, we're going to give this guy $150 million, whatever million dollars is, and it hasn't been there. So what are you going to try and shoehorn to look for, I guess?
That's a great point, Cam, because, look, Jared Goff and Carson Wentz just got massive extensions before the start of this season after they had played 3 years in the league. Mitch will be done with 3 years in the league after this year. Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes are getting those extensions.
Yeah.
Mitch Trubisky right now, if the Bears were to give him that, it would be a criminal offense almost.
It'd be a huge mistake at this point.
It would be like giving Jay Cutler $125 million. Who would ever do a dumb thing like that?
Moon. but I think, Cam, your point, though, about the rookie contracts, this is why the current NFL landscape is different. where you can say, oh, we got to wait on this quarterback. You know, we got to give him time to develop. You kind of can't.
Right.
In today's NFL, where Mitch Trubisky is making $7.8 million this year and is making $9.7 million next year, you can't wait. You have to get the most out of these guys in these rookie contracts to then tell you, okay, we can extend this guy. There is never going to be another Phillip Rivers or Aaron Rodgers sitting for 3 years.
Right.
That's never going to happen again because of the way the rookie wage scale is. Excuse me. I mean, you have to get the most when the quarterback is cheap because that's how you build a roster.
Right.
The only other way to do it is if you have a great quarterback who can overcome.
Wilson.
You have Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson is going to be worth every penny of that contract he got from the Seahawks. Your Tom Brady's, your Aaron Rodgers, even a guy like Matthew Stafford. You look at him and you're like, is he really worth that money? He's a good quarterback. But he's getting all this money, and the Lions are not winning. And you're kind of like, you wonder if they just started over with some of the defensive talent they have. Maybe that's a better team if you don't have a highly paid quarterback who cannot raise all boats in the way that the Bears want Trubisky to.
The really hard thing about that position, and it is, listen, being totally fair, is there a position in sports that's harder to project? I don't think so, because it involves leadership, it involves talent, it involves decision making, the intelligence.
There's
in the
no
sport.
Position that's harder to play.
Harder to play or more consequential in a team sport for sure. Maybe golf because you're only playing for yourself. But the hard part we saw with Ryan Pace, the really hard part starts in college. How do you project this guy?
Right.
Well, now to your point, JJ. You don't have 5 years in the NFL to project either. You had more. You could look at him longer before he had to make a decision in college. In some respects, in the NFL, the meter's running. We have to make decisions because it's going to affect what we do with other guys on the roster.
Yes,
Khalil Mack's contract. Do we Leonard Floyd? But boom, all this folds in, and he's the big ace of spades here. They need to be able to fast track their evaluation, and.
But I think their evaluation, what else is it going to show? I mean, if Mitch lights the world on fire for the next 9 games of the season, that could change it.
All's forgiven.
But we're getting to the point, and I thought about this when Matt Nagy talked about, remember at the Saints game, afterwards he was asked, how much stock do you put into garbage time? He said, none.
None.
Well, we're almost getting to the point, and we're not there yet, but by the end of this month, we might be into garbage time for the 2019 season. And what Mitch does should not affect the evaluation of him.
No, because so much of that position involves leadership and the intangibles and performance and how much. If you're out of the playoffs, in a way, I mean, I guess there's anytime you walk on an NFL field, there's pressure. But if you're 3-5 or 4-6, there's not the same pressure as there is if you're 6-4 and kind of jockeying with the Lions and the Vikings and the Packers to get into the playoffs. And to your point, I think that's exactly right. We're not at garbage time yet, but it's getting a little bit toward asterisk time anyway.
I want to get into Mitch's leadership here in a bit. But first, remember, fire sprinklers don't work without water. Get your building's fire pump tested ASAP. I was trying to have like a good transition into that, and I just didn't, into the live read. Anyways, go to sprinklerfitterschicago.org or call 708-597-1800. Sprinkler Fitters, Union Local 281, protecting Chicagoland for over 100 years. All right, anyway, so I want to talk about the leadership aspect of Mitch Trubisky because of all the things and the traits that he brings to the table, this is the one thing that has never been questioned. As a leader, as a vocal presence, his work ethic, all those things that you do want out of your quarterback, that has never come into question with Mitch Trubisky. But I thought it was interesting today. We had a chance to hear from Mitch, being Wednesday at Hallis Hall, and he talked about going back and watching the game broadcast of Sunday's game, not for what he was doing, what the Chargers were doing, but for his body language. And he talked about feeling like that wasn't him out there, that he was so tense, he was so locked in on what he had to do, that he was it kind of permeated everything. I thought that was really, really interesting. Cam, I know you had a good follow-up question about it. What was your impression of what Mitch had to say today about that?
I thought it was sort of a neat wrinkle. I was surprised because they're just seeing the bad body language now, you know? Like, I want to say maybe the half of Nagy's press conferences since the Saints game have been pretty tense. Mitch is not looking particularly thrilled to be up there either. I guess, well, maybe we just caught on to the body language before they wanted to admit it or talk about it.
Well, and let's be honest, Chicago is an expert in quarterback body language.
Yeah.
So back to you.
So I thought it was it's that sort of admission. I know that Nagy told him to go watch it, but it's that sort of acceptance and that sort of approach to changing a weekly routine that NFL players and professional athletes in general are notoriously known for not liking to do. So I think there's something to be said and credited for Mitch's ability to not only just change his routine, but change his routine in a way that it more amplifies what he's not doing well.
So here's what Mitch said about watching it. Quote, "It was mostly just like a guy who looks super serious, kind of tense, and that's really not me. Especially when you're going out on the field and playing the game that you love, you should be out there having fun, which I usually am, but I'm not showing that."
My thing is, how many times have we talked about the first halves of games when he's just so wired? Like, yeah. I don't know if playing free and easy is Mitch Trubisky, at least with the Bears.
It's like only at the end of games.
Right, exactly. Like in like high pressure moments in the wild card game. But it doesn't seem like he is someone who plays with a particular flow or ease about him.
No, and I think that's, be honest, you know that affects, infects and affects the huddle.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
The guys, he's not the only one.
If your quarterback's
that's
tense, the whole offense
is
tense.
You know it. And that's, and I would even extend that up above him to, you know, watching Matt Nagy kind of unravel in a couple of press conferences. I mean, that's, action is character or lack of same. And for Trubisky to lose that, part of the reason he got some respect. Remember the defensive guys when he was running the scout team, nicknamed him Pretty Boy Assassin. Mm-hmm. He was playing with swagger.
Yeah.
Guys like that. Now, the other caveat here is it's hard to be a leader if you're not playing well.
Right. Exactly.
You know, you follow me.
Snowballs. Yeah.
Yeah. Follow me. Grab the flag and follow me, and they're going to say, "Why? You're not very good."
Right.
You know, so you hope that he can play well enough to lend cred to his words, because he has to be the leader. But if he doesn't act like it, It will infect the rest of the team.
I think to your point, is that you talk to offensive players and they do the standard plot, he's our quarterback. But then you ask them about like how do you feel when you see Mitch, you know, talking a little bit on the field and getting hype, and they all smile and go, "Man, like this offense is so much more fun when Mitch is just, you know, talking a little crap to other teammates and."
And telling Josh Sitton to shut up, it's his huddle.
Right,
yeah, exactly.
Right.
And so I do think that we're at the point where now we're just being like, "Oh, Mitch, you should smile. That's an improvement," which is not great.
Yeah, that's not a good place to be in.
But there's something. I mean, the quarterback is a leader, and I think that I think there is real merit to the idea that players add an extra 10% when their quarterback is, you know. I mean, look at that Baker Mayfield play against the Jets when Jamal Adams knocked him on his butt, and then he just popped up and started yapping at Adams. Like, I know Baker Mayfield has his own problems, but that the Browns said after the game that, you know, that gets us pumped. And I think that they want to see a little more out of that from Mitch, who I think a lot of times maybe looks like a little deer in the headlight-ish.
Yeah, and just the way that he plays, I mean, he said it, but I've been thinking this for a while, that he plays tense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely right. If that guy, even if you're in the huddle and you're spitting out the play call and you're sounding confident, if guys, you get up to line and you're tense, guys notice that. You can feel that.
Oh, yeah.
And that sense.
We can see it in the press box.
Yeah.
Behind glass.
Right.
You think, you know, Cody Whitehair doesn't feel it?
They're noticing that. And this is just, this goes back to what should the expectation for Mitch be? And the fact that we're talking about he's got to play free and easy, man.
Almost three years into his career.
Right. That is not promising.
He was playing more free and easy with Dow Loggins than he is this year.
Yeah, with no expectations.
No expectations. And I think, you know, this goes also, part of this is the coach. How do they put him in the best position to succeed? Now, you know, they'll talk, and you hate to hear this out of a coach, well, we have to kind of dial things back. But as I mentioned, I think last week, one of the things they may have to do is take the R or the P out of RPO. Okay, this is your call. You know, we're not really restricting you, but let's take some of the decision making off, and then maybe he starts playing fast. It's a shame we're even talking about this in his third year, but that's reality.
And I think this is another conversation entirely for another day, but that's sort of, to me at least, what was such a gut punch about that final drive is that they were moving and you were going, oh boy, like that game winning drive, here it comes. Mitch, I mean, after the scramble, got up and started howling and flexing, and you were feeling it. You was feeling the offense, and then it's just sort of the knee and the decision. Nagy pulled the carpet out from under them, I think. And you can put statistics or tactical decisions aside, but just from a purely emotional standpoint, here was the Bears going, we've seen this blueprint before, but we can win games because Trubisky's good at driving us late in the game.
Right.
And then to sort of stop that momentum after probably the biggest momentum swinging play of the game is that scramble,
yeah,
I think.
That scramble.
Or maybe Miller's fourth down, whatever it is. But that sort of, you took what small amount of energy the Bears offense had and you sort of stunted it. And that's more so than the decision making, what I don't understand.
I think I want to get into that specifically with the Pinheiro hash mark hash gate or whatever I said. Hashtag hash gate or whatever.
Hashtag hash mark.
Hashtag hash gate. Hash mark hash gate. Hash gate. Whatever it is, I want to get into that in a bit. I just want to wrap up this Mitch discussion, just kind of putting a bow on it. So I think going forward, my expectation for Mitch is that he is going to be a below average quarterback in the NFL. Because statistically and historically, guys who are below average quarterbacks in their first 32 games are below average quarterbacks in the rest. And if you're expecting him to be a Hall of Fame caliber player like Drew Brees or a consistent Pro Bowler in Alex Smith, those guys are much more of the outliers in this discussion than they are the norm.
Yeah, and some of those guys that we talked before, it happened in other systems, meaning other coaches.
Yeah.
So when Drew Brees, who wasn't bad in San Diego,
he's fine,
but he goes to Sean Payton and becomes Drew Brees.
Right. Alex Smith.
So
goes to Andy Reid and Matt Nagy.
Right, and can that happen with the same coach? This is kind of where one of the themes I'm writing about for tomorrow, this rest of this week. Now is when Matt Nagy earns the Coach of the Year. If you want to prove, you got to earn it now.
Yeah.
Because this, and that starts with your quarterback, this entire team, but it really does focus on the quarterback.
My expectations aren't changing on this season based on what I've seen, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Just, I expect to see what I've seen so far.
Right. Yeah.
And I think you have to bring in another quarterback this offseason. And if Mitch is on the roster next year, bad decision, but it happens. Even if he's on the roster next year, someone needs to be there in Bourbonnais pushing him.
I think he's on the roster next year, but you have to bring in someone to push him.
Right.
And I think that guy's got to be a veteran. I don't think you can bring a rookie in to do it.
Okay. When
you don't have a first-round pick, I think you got to make it
right,
a veteran, bridge. Marcus Mariota is an obvious candidate as a guy who could be changing systems and who knows Mark Helfrich. It's not like Marcus Mariota has been very good. We're not talking about bringing in a guy who's definitely going to win the starting job, but you got to light a fire under Trubisky.
Right. But that could be – I mean, that's a whole other show. That
yes,
could be,
it is. We're not going to totally
awful.
Get into that.
That could be horrendous because you have two starting quarterbacks, you have none. And Nagy could be that other coach that Marcus Mariota takes off doing.
Right.
Can you imagine how this locker room might divide if there was Mitch? There would be the Mitchell files and there would be the Mariota files. This is an ugly
lot to get into on that.
Looking forward to training camp.
We're going to have a lot of time.
Scenarios are bad.
We're going to have a lot of time to get into that. In a more immediate sense, though, if you're enjoying this podcast or our podcast on NBC Sports Chicago, be sure to check out the Bulls Talk podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Jason Goff dives into the latest news and analysis on the Bulls on the latest pod, and you can watch him on Bulls pre- and post-game live on NBC Sports Chicago. You can also read all of Casey Johnson's excellent work on the Bulls on NBCSportsChicago.com and the My Teams app. Anyways, let's finish this pod talking about the Eddie Pinheiro hash mark stuff, because I think there's an interesting discussion to be had here about the chain of command and why the Bears did not give Pinheiro a lining up where he would have preferred, because he kind of let it slip on Tuesday in the locker room that the left hash was not his preferred hash mark.
It was really awkward.
Yeah, I was not there. I had a prior engagement. Cam, you were there. I saw the video. Awkward because he said it, and then you could tell he didn't think he probably should have said
there
that.
Was just like a wave of acknowledgement, like he said that, and then he realized it and got very short. All of us, it was a tense moment in a season full of mess.
So, you know, Nagy was asked about it a couple times today. You know, he said there's a communication process. He kind of left it at that. Was you know he was positive about Pinheiro. You know, Mitch Trubisky was asked about it and said, "I just did what I was told," which was take a knee at the left hash. it's just another layer of the disaster that were the last 43 seconds of the game for the Bears. One that you wonder how this was – like, how did it come to this?
Yeah.
How did it come to your kicker missing a kick and then being like, I really don't want to kick from the hash mark that I right. kicked at, which was the left hash mark when the wind was blowing right to left and he just missed the kick barely to the left.
Yeah, I'm going to just plant my flag on this hot take and say it's a failure of communication. I mean, it really does sound like Pinheiro's input was not at all taken into consideration here. And I don't know how when you are taking a knee for ball positioning, you don't ask or know where the kicker wants you to. And I get that you can't, if you want to be on the right hash, you can't move the quarterback 7
right.
yards
can't
across the field. But you
have move
to
it to the center.
You have to know this.
Yeah.
You have to know where your kicker, especially when you have the means. It's not like, you know, you're gonna spike the ball with 2 seconds left and you're going to kick where you're going to kick. You have almost a minute. You have a timeout. You've committed to this approach, mm-hmm. which is another entire conversation entirely. But you're doing that approach. Know where your kicker likes to kick the ball from.
Yeah, my hot take is just make the kick, son.
Yeah.
Well,
shut
also,
up
yes.
And make, he
should also,
have
yes.
shut up in the yeah. locker room. Come on. That tells me he's making excuses for himself. I didn't like that. I mean, and again, it's not so much – he may have preferred that, but if it was really the case, maybe he should have – I don't know. Maybe take – plus, I mean, and again, this is, you know, crossing a sports analogy, but if that – to me, where he should have been kicking from was the left hash. Yeah. You may not like it, but in terms of how the trajectory of the ball, if it's blowing off the leg right to left, you aim into like a golfer. You kind of mm-hmm. draw the ball. And it really bothered me that he would do that. I think there was a real mistake made, you know, with the not moving the ball closer. But shut up and make the kick, son.
It's a 41-yard kick. It's not like the Bears are asking him to make
right.
a 52-yard kick.
Yeah.
I just think it's interesting because, you know, Matt Nagy brought up the end of the Colts game when he was defending his decision on Monday about
weird.
Going conservative. It was supposed to be saying, hey, you know, Frank Reich went conservative, but Frank Reich ran a couple plays. Also, Adam Vinatieri hit his game-winning kick from the center of the field. And I would guess that Adam Vinatieri had some input in that. I don't know that for certain, but Adam Vinatieri is the greatest kicker of all time. He's a guy who probably feels comfortable walking right up to his coach and saying, hey, if I'm kicking a game-winning field goal, I want it to be from here. I don't know if Eddie Pinheiro did that. I don't know if he feels like he can do that. I don't know if he told Chris Tabor, and it was relayed to Matt Nagy, and Nagy just said, whatever, make the kick. We don't know what that chain of command is. Matt Nagy said there was communication. To me, I'm with you, Cam. It seems like there was a breakdown somewhere that led to this kick going from a place where your rookie kicker is not comfortable. And I think, look, yeah, he probably should not have said that, Moon. That is something that will not play very well in the locker room.
He sounds like he's whining. He sounds like he's making retroactive
and he did,
excuses.
I will give him this credit, is that right after the game, he took accountability for missing the kick. This was not an immediately after the game thing,
yeah.
him saying, well, I really wanted that from the center. Right after the game, he said, I got to make the kick. The loss is on me. All that. He said all the right things right after the game. I give him credit for that. I think this is a direct question that was asked to him. He gave a direct and honest answer, which we like when players do that with us. And should he have said it? Probably not. But also, you know, you could tell right after, he was like, oh, crap, I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah. He shouldn't have been thinking that at this point. I'm sorry.
Well, that is a good point. Yeah. He shouldn't have been thinking
make it. Make the kick. Come on. And that, as you say, JJ, it's 41 yards. No, it's not a chip shot, which is why they moving the extra points
right.
back and they started missing them. But there was just so much wrong with that whole situation that it was almost like he took accountability after the game. And then given a couple of days, well, it really wasn't all my fault. I mean, I'm putting thoughts in his head, and that's probably not fair to the kid, but make the kick.
I think what is something that's being missed in this conversation just on a macro level is that I think both of these critiques can exist in the same space, right?
Yeah, I would agree.
Like,
yeah,
100%. Like, yes, you're an NFL kicker who was – kept on the roster because of your leg talent, and you missed a 41-yard field goal. That is inexcusable. 40-yard field goal is not hard for NFL kickers. It's impossible for me. But you can also criticize the lead-up to that kick.
Right.
And I think it's just as valid as the kick. Just make the kick. Yeah, just call the right plays. Make the right decisions.
Don't have your quarterback miss a wide-open Taylor Gabriel with 9.5 minutes to go. That would have meant you didn't even have to deal with this garbage.
You want your kicker to make comfortable kicks? Give your kicker comfortable kicks, you know?
Do you think in that situation, again, unfair to compare him, with 40-some seconds to go, Tom Brady's taking a knee?
Well, yeah, no.
It's a 40. No. Do you think
– you know what?
With this year's kickers, he might be, but no.
No, but
Aaron Rodgers, I was thinking about this. The great quarterbacks are not only not taking a knee, they're throwing the ball. Aaron Rodgers is going to throw the ball to Aaron Jones or Devontae Adams, or it can be Alan Lazard. Who cares? He's going to throw the ball. The good quarterbacks, you think, I would trust, call it Kirk Cousins to make a throw in that situation.
Wow.
Yeah, I would. But
look where you've come.
The bad quarterbacks, you're not even considering it.
That's what
and Matt Nagy did not sound like someone who even considered passing
the bad quarterbacks, you take a knee and try 41-yard field goals. Yeah. No, I mean, it's harsh to say that, but that's – he needs to rethink. If you do that 1,000 out of 1,000 times, whoa. You know, get your kicker closer. That is just – NFL math, and you know, I think we threw together. He kind of defied analytics because the success rate falls off after 40 yards.
Yeah. Yep,
goes from the 90s to the 70s.
There's a 13% drop from a 41-yard field goal to a 37-yard field goal.
I think the throw point you made is great. His press conference got slammed for that because of the run stuff, but I think the throwing was the most indicting answer. I mean, he like laughed like in the reporter's face and was like, "Throw it in that situation," and he was incredulous that someone would ask that. Which I think is more of a damning response than saying, oh, well, they knew we were running it. We might lose yardage. Like, his explicit, almost comical reaction to the idea of throwing it late in the game, I think, is the most damning answer from
that. It was second down. If they wanted to run the clock out, they could throw it on second. They could run it on third or take a knee on third. And then you still kick it on fourth down and you're fine.
Which goes back to the big question, I mean, the franchise question, does he trust his quarterback?
Yeah.
And you know, we saw situations in the last couple of weeks where Mitch has taken a sack instead of getting rid of the football.
Right.
That would be sadly. They threw it in the headline. If there's a crisis of confidence, it's not like there's no reason for that. It's,
right.
You know, so maybe he's thinking, Mitch he's liable to throw one like he did against, or he's liable to take a sack like he did in New Orleans.
Right.
You know, or he's going to intentional ground. Something bad can happen. Because that's his quarterback. So I think there's a lack of confidence, and he didn't want to talk about it. And it's old news. They're on to Philadelphia. We probably should be after this podcast.
Right.
But those are some realities that will linger until they're not a reality.
I will say I pity him because we talk all the time about, you don't trust your quarterback enough, but we trust his kicker enough, and all of a sudden he doesn't trust his kicker enough, and he's trying to do more or less what the press yells at him to do, and then every time he does that, we pick up, why didn't you do this for this? Like,
he ran the football 30 times and lost.
Exactly.
As it turns out, that's what happens with bad teams.
Yeah, I do pity the fact that it's like a game of whack-a-mole where every time he plugs something, a new thing comes up.
Right.
Yeah.
He fixes the offense with the run game, and then they can't get in the end zone. Anyways, we are that kind of brings it full circle with the expectations for Mitch and everything. And now we're on to Philadelphia, and I will have a fresh Under Center podcast coming out for you on Friday. Looking ahead to the Bears-Eagles game this weekend at Lincoln Financial Field, you can read all of our stuff on NBCSportsChicago.com. You can follow me on Twitter at JJ Stankovitz, Cam on Twitter at Kingsley Ellis and Moon. Your Twitter is still
locked haywire. Out. Yeah. Yeah, they don't even.
You can
know
get
me.
Moon's thoughts on this podcast on NBCSportsChicago.com and on the My Teams app, but maybe not on Twitter yet. Also, you should check out this Sunday Night 7 game on the NBC Sports Predictor app. There's really no reason not to play. It's totally free and has $2 million in guaranteed cash prizes this season, with $100,000 up for grabs every week. Just make 7 predictions about what will happen in Sunday Night Football for a chance to win some serious money. Download the NBC Sports Predictor app or head to NBCSports.com/predictor now to make your Sunday Night 7 picks. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Under Center Podcast, and we will talk to you next time.